779. Improve land use regulations related to accessory short-term rentals through the Regulatory Improvement Code Amendment Package 6.
Okay, so we have Sandra Wood here to walk us through this. We have a substitute ordinance, which is Exhibit A, and this is a result of our hearing on July 2nd. We voted on several amendments to what the Planning and Sustainability Commission had forwarded to us. This substitute ordinance encompasses those amendments that the council made during our previous hearing. It also includes one additional change, and that's because it came to my attention that the existing code requires guest bedrooms to be within a dwelling unit, which is either the house or the accessory dwelling unit. That means that a guest bedroom in a detached accessory structure, which is the case in some places, a single structure in the backyard would not be allowed if it hadn't been formally approved as an accessory dwelling unit. I think I've got that right. It hasn't gone through the ADU process, but it's nevertheless there and used as a bedroom, can't be used. That's obviously not going to be a huge number of these, but I asked the staff to incorporate a code change to deal with this inconsistency. So you'll see that on pages 21 and 27 showing that additional code change for both types of accessory short-term rentals. So before we discuss the overall package, we need to put the substitute ordinance on the table and then hear from staff. So is there a motion to substitute the substitute?
Move the substitute.
Second.
Okay. And roll call to put the substitute on the table.
Salzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. Okay. So, Sandra, I'll ask you to take it from there and review anything else that needs to be covered that I may have left out or answer any questions from the council. So,
I think, Mayor Hales, we've covered everything. We do need to take testimony on this,
yes,
this last piece of amendment, but other than that, I think everything's on the table.
Okay. Any questions for the Bureau? Okay.
I guess I have one question.
Mm-hmm.
Just want to make sure that I know that we're allowing homeowners to rent up to one or two bedrooms in their house.
Correct. Through a type A, and then 3 to 5 bedrooms through a type B accessory short-term rental through the conditional use process.
Okay. Well, that's more like, that's like a B&B.
Yes.
Bed and breakfast,
yes.
Right? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So can somebody rent their entire house for a period of time as well under our new ordinance?
The new ordinance requires that the primary resident live at the house for at least 9 months, and that's the amendment that you passed last time. So if they're there for 9 months and they're going to be gone for 3 months, they could pull a type A permit and rent out one or two bedrooms. The idea is that they're not renting out the full house. If they have a 5-bedroom house, they're not renting out all 5 bedrooms.
So they could rent out one or two of their bedrooms and not actually be there for 3 months maximum.
That's a possibility, yeah.
Okay.
That would be the maximum.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Other questions or concerns for staff? Great. Thank you, Sandra.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have folks signed up to testify on the amendment?
3 testifiers, Lightning, Joe Walsh, and Benjamin Barber.
Okay, come on up.
Go on up.
Morning. Good morning. My name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Think Lab. One of the issues, again, I have on the short-term rentals is that I actually think that the homeowner should have a right to participate in the short-term rentals. I don't think they should be denied that. I know we're going to be doing a zoning code change on this to be able to do that. Now, one of the issues I have, and I'll be candid, is that some of these new companies like Airbnb, Uber, and Lyft, you're talking shared economy, and that sounds great, but I have a real problem with you entering the Portland, Multnomah County market and thinking you can operate illegal. You've been doing that for the last few years, and then you think you can all of a sudden push this through and get it approved. I have a real problem with that because that gives you a competitive advantage over the locals who operate property management companies, very knowledgeable at what they do, know how to do this, but they stand back because they say, hey, if we do that, that could jeopardize my my business, and in the community, I've tried to follow the rules and the laws up to this point. Now, yes, it would be great if it's approved and I can step in and begin, but you've already taken a market share of possibly 1,500 plus or minus listings. That gives you a great competitive advantage. Now, I'm not saying not to approve this because I want it approved. I'm saying we need to look at Airbnb and say, look, you've operated for many years in the past. We're going to fine you for every listing that you basically were able to get illegally. And or we're going to exclude you for up to 1 year when we approve this and let the competitors have a fair playing field out there who have followed the rules, followed the laws. You don't come into this city thinking you can get things approved by breaking the law. It doesn't happen. We're watching this very closely. There's locals here who want to participate in the short-term rentals, and they have every right to do it. And when you're talking shared economies, what I want to do, I'm from Portland. I've been living in Portland my whole life. I want to see the local property management companies have net worth companies of over $1 billion, like yours is $10 billion right now, by operating illegally in this city. I want this to be looked at close. I want fines assessed against you, and I want you to understand, you don't push things through and get them approved by operating illegal, and the locals here are sitting back following the rules, and you don't take over the market and create a monopoly for your company. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't think, Lightning, that we have, the city attorney could advise us on this, but I don't think we have the ability to fine people for behavior that wasn't prohibited before. Now, I think the people that were in violation of the zoning code by operating short-term rentals without it being legal under our zoning code is not the network company like Airbnb or any of these others, but the property owner. So the people that we have the authority to go after, I believe the people we have the authority to go after are the homeowners.
That is correct.
And that would be at least theoretically possible for the city of Portland to go after those 1,500 or so, or however many there are in all these different organizations, to go after people for not having complied with the law before.
Okay, if I can respond to that,
sure.
Please. I look at Airbnb as an enabler, number one. I'm not going to say that they're operating it illegally, but they know the hosts are operating illegally if they haven't applied for the proper permit, which the Airbnb or bed and breakfast, which is approximately $4,200 to get that permit. They have not applied for that permit in the past. Airbnb is taking a large majority of the listings right now, 1,600. When you're calculating the value of your companies, when you have 1,600 listings, and you're trying to add value, and I'm saying the local property management companies have every right to be in the middle of this, but they're hesitating because they want to make sure it's approved and it's legal before they step in and do it, because they're long-term, they've been here, they have a lot to lose if they don't do that. And the reality is Airbnb is still, it's still up in the air. Are they operating illegally? Now, if you do a lot of research, a lot of people think they are, because they're the enabler to the host, and they should not be setting it up to where this illegal activity is taking place. And I understand there's a lot of research to be done on this. I'm just saying that Airbnb, Uber, Lyft, you need to be very cautious on thinking that you can operate illegally and then getting people to push it through, because you're making an effort to push it through illegally. And again, I am alleging that they may possibly be operating illegally, but that is to be looked at, and if they are, they need to be fined and possibly excluded from operating in this city for a certain amount of time. Here, and that's my position. Thank you.
Thank you.
Lightning, I just have to say, I think you've got a hell of a point. And if Airbnb itself had been violating any laws that we had, then I would certainly agree with you that we should fine them. And I think it's unfortunate that we're in a position where, although they were benefiting from illegal activity, the only people we could come down on is the homeowners, as I understand it, as the mayor just said. But I think that your general point that we shouldn't be rewarding people who've been operating illegally without making them take some responsibility wherever legally possible, you're absolutely right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Benjamin?
So any system always has people who are going to try to game those systems, and I'm sure you all are aware of that already. And it is already hard enough to try to get, you know, individual homeowners, for instance, my landlord, to know all the proper regulations and code enforcement and et cetera. What is more concerning is I have a neighbor who I'll not name explicitly who was discussing with his roommates using Airbnb as a method of running a brothel. And I expressed how that's not good for their long-term sanity and not good for, you know, their futures. But people will game the system or will be negligent. And it's a hard thing to sort of herd these cats into compliance a lot of the time. And I hope you guys spend some good time doing that. I see that the rental or the short-term rental market is kind of a zero-sum game. So the money that will be given to the homeowners is basically money that will be going away from the hoteliers. And I'm not sure if this has been taken into consideration with the Convention Center Hotel project, how, you know, this is going to affect the hoteliers, which do employ people. I'm sure you guys have excellent staff to figure that out. But there is also the very real fact that there's going to be another 750,000 people coming to this area in the next 20 years, and how do you accommodate those people? One of the ideas I passed along in the hackathon was, I know gentrification is brought up a lot, and obviously this Airbnb is going to push up rental prices. I thought what might be useful is to provide the mechanism where people whose rents or property taxes are getting out of control could form a real estate investment trust with a property developer, retain their home after a new condo is built to replace, you know, one house with four or five condos. And if there's some sort of capital gains so that they would lose the house because they can't pay that capital gains tax, have some sort of like Mooney bond type capital gains exemption so that we can kind of infill a bit more effectively without pushing people out and lower those rental forces. Because as a native Oregonian, I'm even feeling the pressure. I want to stay here and live here and my entire life, but it's getting really expensive.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask you a question? We don't have a lot of good data nationally because it's a new phenomenon on the impact on the housing market. But you said two things. You said people could be pushed out, and you said likely that rents are going to go up. So can you just take 1 minute and tell us why you believe that is true?
Well, there's a finite supply of rental housing units. Basically, the hoteliers operate, and they run a kind of a higher-end market, and the Airbnb is basically competing with them on price on the lower end scale of things. But in terms of a daily sort of rental, right, if I rent an entire house, you know, me and my roommates probably each pay $500 a month, whereas my same landlord could just do Airbnb for all of the individual rooms and make triple or quadruple that amount, you know, $50 a day, because it's so close to PSU and such. And he would be foolish not to. I mean, it would be in his logical self-interest. And I understand that he should have the ability and the right to do with his property as he wishes. But we ultimately need to address the finite amount of space that we have in the city and how best to utilize that. Otherwise, people are going to get pushed out who otherwise just want to be productive members of this community who can't find a place to live.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Mr. Wall?
My name is Joe Walsh. I represent Individuals for Justice. On this item, we fully support everything Mr. Lightning had said, and that's why we're at the table to lend support to what he said. There was a question that came up, and I don't have the answer to, maybe one of you do, and it was kind of touched on a little bit ago by Commissioner Fish, that if you have short-term rentals, does that affect the hotels that normally would rent out? For instance, when I was working at Long Beach Naval Shipyard, when I first went there, I went to a motel and I rented a room for a month. It was a short-term rental, and they had special prices for the month. So you wouldn't have to pay $50 a day. It was something like $400 or $500 a month, which is reasonable. Is there any discussion on the impact of what that will do to motels and hotels on these short-term rentals? Because it would seem to me that it would undercut them. And I'm just curious, and it did come up, that question. We're in full support of what Mr. Lightning is saying, and we also think that this should pass. But it seems like there's some loose ends here, and I'm curious if anybody did any work saying to the hotels and motels, okay, will this impact you, and what percentage of short-term rentals do you have exceeding, say, 30 days? Because that's the area that you're going to impact with this. So that was a curious question. I didn't have the answer to it, so maybe somebody else can simplify it and I can take it back.
Yeah, I don't think we have a complete answer because nobody's done – it's kind of hard to disprove a negative, even in economic analysis, but nobody's done that kind of exhaustive economic analysis that I know of on this issue. A little bit – we have a little bit of anecdotal evidence on the hotel side, which is that hotel occupancy rates in Portland are at an all-time or at least recent low. You know, they're doing great, even while this phenomenon of short-term rentals by websites is going on without benefit of permits. So, you know, we know that the hotels are doing well and that there are three new hotels in the permit pipeline, I believe, at the moment. Mr. Scarlett is nodding. Yeah. So now those tend to be in the central city. The hotels tend to be in the central city, the new ones, I mean, where the Airbnb and other hosts are located is, of course, much more broadly distributed across the city and may have more an effect on the neighborhood scale motel than it does on the downtown hotel. But that's anecdotal evidence, not scientific evidence. That's what we know.
I'm still confused.
I am
so
too.
I'm going to take back this answer and correct me if I'm wrong. You don't know.
We don't know, but the evidence seems to be that the hotel industry is largely unaffected by this phenomenon in Portland.
So then there's two further
points. Yeah, right now, but if you legalize it, it's not going to decrease.
Right, but the question is how much does it increase? We don't know.
And that's one of the reasons that I inserted the requirement for a report in September of 2016. So that's one of the things that we'll be looking at. The other point is that the taxes that are paid on these short-term rentals will go to the same places that the other hotel and motel taxes go to, which includes the Visitor Development Fund. And the Visitor Development Fund is targeted more to hotel occupancy rather than to private rentals.
Okay. Let me ask you this question, Commissioner. If you find out by doing this research and coming back in 2016 that this is devastating to the motels, would you take a different position, all of you?
Well, that's one of the reasons that I specifically put the date before the end of my term in office so that I will be here to take action if necessary.
Okay. I'll take that back.
Thank you. Yeah, good morning.
Good morning. My name is Laura Rogers, and I wrote each of you, and thank you for getting back to me so quickly. I was impressed. I am opposed to not the one and two bedroom, and thank you for that, limiting it to one to two bedrooms, and thank you for requiring that the owner occupy the house for 270 days. I am very grateful for that. We have a house in our neighborhood, just a few houses for me. They rent out a house up to 10 people. They're not there. They haven't been there. They could make over $100,000 a year by renting this out. It can occupy up to 10 people, and we're in a nice little family neighborhood on the east side of Mount Tabor in the Montevilla area, and there's trash, there's noise, and I'm concerned about, and I've read your bill, I've read the whole thing all the way through. You notify the people contiguous and across the street. My concern is please notify both blocks, I think on either side. The garbage affects all of us. There is a quiet German couple that lives next door to this house. They will never complain, but they are actually getting physically sick over the noise and the parties and everything. They're too shy to complain. I'm not shy to complain, so I'm down here kind of representing. I've spoken to everybody on my block. Some can't come from work and everything, but we're concerned about not the one and two bedrooms and occasional renting, but if they get pay the $4,000 or whatever to have a house rented, you really are losing control. And to me, it's losing the family neighborhood. It's more of a hotel rental. So my opposition is to the bigger things. Could you notify, and if you notify us, it's just a notification. There's no recourse for us to do. So you tell me, okay, I'm going to do this, but then there's no recourse for me to make sure they stay in their zone. So thank you for amending it and changing it, but I am concerned about what potentially can happen with more people being in a home.
Thank you. If you have a minute while you're here, I hope you talk to Mr. Scarlett there in the front row about the code enforcement process that is available for
I am aware of it, and I've already made my concerns known through the code enforcement. I have the number. Thank you.
Good. Thank you. Thanks very much.
Can
anyone
just
else?
Ask staff.
Yes. Sandra, could you come back?
One more testifier.
Steve Entwil.
Come on up.
Bissell. Senior.
Good morning, Council. My name is Stephen Entwistle, and I'm with Individuals for Justice. And this Airbnb and the change of the law in order to benefit this rental issue, how is this going to affect people living in public housing? And are their rents going to go up? In San Francisco, there's been a lot of gentrification over the last 10 years or so. There's a lot of homeless in San Francisco as a result of this. Quite frankly, I would estimate there would be, within a couple of years, we're going to have another 10,000 homeless on our streets if this passes and the rents and people get gentrified out and they go on the street. Not only that, we're going to have more hungry kids because parents are going to lose their places, they're going to lose their homes, they're going to lose their jobs. Okay, we don't have a safety net to protect these folks. Okay, and you can just look at the history of San Francisco and what they've been going through. Take a real hard look at that and look and see if this is really the right thing to do for Portland. Okay, we don't know how to deal with homeless here in Portland. That's obvious. I'm out here every day seeing the results, and it's not getting any better. We're using the wrong fork for the salad when it comes to homelessness, and this is going to be a proven deal breaker for folks that are really trying to work hard to keep afloat, and this is an anchor. It's going to sink them down to the ground, to the bottom. There's going to be more suicides, too. We don't know how to deal with that either. The city has a lot of issues they don't really know how to deal with, and now we're making the problem worse. I know it's not a very cheerful comment, but I'm just seeing what's already taken place in other cities, and it's coming here. And we're not prepared for it. What are we going to do with another 10,000 homeless that we don't even know what to do with the 3,500 that we have now? Anyway, that's all I need to say. Thank you.
You asked a great question. If I can just, I think it's worth clarifying something.
Go ahead.
When you say public housing, I take it you mean more broadly affordable housing.
Well,
because this has no impact on public housing, meaning housing administered by HUD or the housing authority. That's regulated housing. People cannot sublet and participate. This has no impact on multifamily housing. We've deferred that issue, so apartment buildings, things like that, and subsidized housing, it's not allowed. This is people's homes. That's not public housing, but I would agree with you that the units, the rooms in those houses are part of an inventory of affordable housing, and that for some people, that's the only way they can afford to live in our city is to rent a room in a house. And a concern that we do have is that in taking those units offline, it may actually create a problem, which is why Dan and I have an idea we're pressing in connection with this. But sometimes language trips us up. Public housing per se, that's a term of art, is not covered by this. It's not allowed in public housing.
I understand.
But affordable housing, to the extent we think of those rooms in someone's house as being a first place that someone can afford to live in our city.
I understand
they
that.
Will be impacted, and that is a concern.
I'm just going by the results in San Francisco with public housing down there after all this came to pass, okay? I don't think we're protected here. I think that's a false analogy. I mean, the results,
I'm not drawing a false analogy. I'm agreeing with you.
The proof is going to be in the pudding, okay? The future is in jeopardy for a lot of people, and we don't need more homeless folks on the street. Okay, we need to lift them up, not push them down and out in the street. That's all.
I'm just saying, I agree with you, but technically, public housing is not regulated here, so that area is protected.
I understand that, but the results are, okay? If that's the case, then what happened to San Francisco?
San Francisco, first of all, is not affordable to people below middle class.
Oh, not anymore.
And second, the market forces that are encouraging people to take units offline and participate in the shared economy are meaning fewer units for people that can afford them. And that should be a concern of the city.
The shared economy is only shared by a certain percentage of people. It's not everybody. Okay, we have a very unequal, the gap between the rich and the poor in this country is growing. Okay, and this doesn't help. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, anyone else that wants to speak on the amendment? If not, then this is, because we've acted on amendments today, this rolls over to second reading and adoption next week.
I have another question. I have
okay,
a question
please.
For staff, please.
Okay, I'm sorry, you did. I forgot.
Sorry.
Come on up.
I just wanted to follow up on Ms. Rogers' question about notification. Does the proposed ordinance require notification at the Neighborhood Association?
Yes, it does. I'll recognize our organizations, which would be the Neighborhood Association, the Business Association, and the Neighborhood Coalition Office.
Another good reason to participate in one's neighborhood association, because then even if you are a little beyond the personal notification, you would find out through the neighborhood association.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Good. Thank you. Good point. Other questions? Please.
Yes, and there's an embarrassing question because I should know the answer to this, and maybe it's for Paul or for one of my colleagues rather than Sandra, but I think that we had agreement that we were going to take up Mr. Unger's suggestion that part of a permit for being a short-term rental host was going to be that you'd have to agree in any advertising that you would list your permit number. And I cannot for the life of me remember how exactly we memorialized that concept.
We memorialized it in both the ordinance and on the last page of Exhibit A, page 51, an amendment to Title 6, which says that the operators of a Type A or Type B accessory short-term rental permit must include their permit number or conditional use case file number as applicable in all advertising and other listed services, et cetera, et cetera.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Your suggestion was adopted.
Yes.
All right. Other questions for Sandra?
I have a comment. It's not a question. So I just, you know, the testimony today, I think, underscores sort of how vexing the shared economy is for people like myself who are just sort of beginning to absorb all of its implications. And while I welcome Airbnb and other organizations that provide for the shared economy, and I welcome this ordinance that provides a path for homeowners and Airbnb to legally operate within our zoning code and to begin to pay lodging taxes, it is a double-edged sword. We've heard in testimony that Airbnb allows people to get external sources of revenue from rental incomes that help them pay their property taxes, help them stay in their houses. Mm-hmm. But as we just heard testimony today, and I think as Commissioner Fish and I both share this concern, we also know that it's going to ultimately diminish the number of rooms for rent. And that is something, and that is why we have proposed, and we will bring back a proposal on August 6th, to dedicate the incremental lodging tax generated from these Airbnb and other short-term rentals to the Housing Investment Fund so that we can increase the supply of affordable rental housing. There's a clear nexus here. And while the impact may not be large to start with, the number of units may not be large, it's going to grow over time. And as we heard in testimony, we have a crisis of affordable rental housing. We need to dedicate this incremental lodging tax to the Housing Investment Fund. And we will bring back the proposal that was brought back earlier. We'll bring it back on August 6th for a council decision on that.
Mayor, if I could also add a comment. I will not be here next week. I'll be helping my daughter get ready for her senior year in college. But had I been here, I would have voted yes on this substitute. I think the work that's been done in the single-family context has been very thoughtful from the Planning Commission, Bureau of Development Services, the hearings we've held, the council discussion. In fact, I think it's a model of how we do our best work in a collegial way, getting to the point where all five members of council are comfortable moving forward. And that, I think, should always be our goal. And so I think on the single-family context, we've got it right. And I really appreciate the amendments which my colleagues have offered, which I think have greatly strengthened this legislation and potentially set a framework for how other cities can address this issue as well. So I won't be here to cast my vote, but were I here, I would proudly vote yes. So thank you.
Thank you. Other questions or comments? Well, Sandra, again, thank you for good work on this issue. It's been a big project for you and for the Planning Bureau. Of course, we're not done because we have other elements of this to talk about. And then if we thought this one was easy, we're going to be wade into the thicket, I suspect, soon on the question of our perhaps antiquated taxicab regulation system and the fact that the shared economy and the Internet is running rings around us there, too. So ready or not, you know, here's the future, and we have to deal with it. I think the goal of having the zoning code at least deal with this issue has been met, but we're not done with trying to catch up to an economy that's doing things quickly and very differently in ways that our traditional regulations haven't always anticipated. So thank you. Appreciate your good work.
Thank you.
Okay, this passes to second reading for next week.
I will announce the date and time. It'll
okay.
be past the second reading, July 30th, regular agenda at 9:30.
Okay, thank you. All right, then let's move to item 780.